The tremor was a discordant note in the grim symphony of Hive Zithar, a discordant bass thrum that vibrated upwards from the planet's tortured crust, through uncounted strata of forgotten history and human detritus, to resonate against the worn synth leather soles of Lexman Asperdavian's boots. It was not the familiar, chaotic percussion of the Hive's ceaseless industry, the distant rhythmic slamming of colossal manufactorum presses, the metallic shriek of overburdened ore conveyors, or the volcanic roar of Promethium refineries venting their incandescent fury into the perpetually smog-choked sky. Nor was it the low, groaning subsidence of the Hive's ancient foundations, a constant reminder of the impossible weight of humanity stacked miles high, a city organism slowly crushing itself under its own mass. This was different. This was a measured, resonant shudder, almost like the slow, deliberate intake of breath from some subterranean behemoth, a creature of impossible scale stirring in the lightless, uncharted depths far beneath even the sump-choked squalor of the underhive. Davian stood on a corroded plasteel gantry, its surface slick with generations of chemical seepage and organic slime. The air, a noxious cocktail of recycled, overbreathed atmosphere, metallic tangs, and the sweet, cloying perfume of decay, was a familiar assault on his senses. It was the breath of Gehenna IV, a sector nestled deep in the hive's underbelly, a place where hope went to die, and only the desperate or the damned chose to linger. Below him, the narrow, labyrinthine alleys were rivers of iridescent filth, reflecting the sickly, intermittent glow of malfunctioning lumen globes that cast long, dancing shadows, turning familiar shapes into monstrous caricatures. He'd heard whispers, of course, in the dimly lit, nutrient-paste-stained recesses of Precinct 734's mess hall, hushed tales from sump scavengers and tunnel rats about strange vibrations, of tools going missing, of sections of tunnel that seemed to shift when no one was looking. He dismissed them as the usual underhive paranoia, the product of minds steeped in deprivation and cheap, illicit stims. But this tremor, stronger now, making the gantry beneath him groan like a dying man, felt chillingly real. It was a subtle wrongness, a discordant note that promised a deeper, more profound dissonance to come. His official designation was Lexman Grade 3, Adeptus Arbites, Precinct 734, Sector Gehenna. In reality, his authority was a faded parchment, its ink blurred by the pervasive damp of the underhive and the cynical indifference of its denizens. His mandate, delivered via a data slate stained with what he hoped was calf, and not something more sinister, had filtered down through no less than 17 layers of labyrinthine administratum bureaucracy from the lofty spires of the sector command far above. The order was deceptively simple. Investigate the sequential disappearance of three separate sanctioned survey teams. These were not mere sump scrapers or wildcat prospectors. The first team consisted of five guild-affiliated geotechs, their mission to chart potential new Promethium veins. The second, a trio of scriptorium-bound historical surveyors from the Departamento Munitorum, tasked with locating and verifying archaic munition caches supposedly lost during the scouring of Zithar centuries ago. The third, and most concerning, was a four-man explorator unit led by a junior Magos biologist named Vol, dispatched from the local Mechanicus Enclave, their purpose shrouded in the usual tech arcana and obfuscation. 12 souls in total vanished without so much as a garbled vox screech to mark their passing. Their last known trajectory, the unmapped, condemned levels directly beneath Gehenna through 4, a place designated on older charts simply as Gehenna Feth Perdita's Maxima. The manifests for their expeditions were meticulously detailed, listing everything from standard-issue LAS carbines and geological scanners to nutrient-paste rations calculated for a Terran standard month of operation. Throne gelt, the lifeblood of any Imperial endeavor, had been exchanged in significant quantities, permissions stamped with the multi-layered seals of various indifferent subdepartments. Yet, all that remained were the echoing silence of unanswered vox calls and a creeping, pervasive unease that had finally, reluctantly, prodded the precinct command into action. Davian clutched the worn, textured grip of his shock maul, its power cell humming a faint, reassuring counterpoint to the unsettling tremors that still occasionally shivered through the plasteel. This was more than just a string of unfortunate disappearances. This felt like the hive itself was developing a malignant tumor in its deepest, most forgotten foundations, a cancer that was beginning to stir. He had a sinking feeling that the 17 layers of bureaucracy were less about due process and more about ensuring maximum plausible deniability should this investigation go, as so many did in the underhive, catastrophically sideways. His own precinct marshal, a bloated, phlegmatic man named Grust, had practically shoved the data slate into Davian's hand with a dismissive wave. "Just find out what happened to them, Davian. Or at least find enough pieces for the Guilders and the Cogboys to stop clogging my damn comm lines. And try not to get yourself lost. We're short on Lexmen as it is." The unspoken addendum was clear. "Don't come back if it means more paperwork." Before venturing into the condemned accessways, Davian had made a perfunctory yet thorough tour of Gehenna4's lower warrens, a grim necessity to remind the local scum that the Lex Imperialis, however thinly stretched, still reached even here. He'd cornered his usual informant, a twitching, sump-scalded ghoul named Ratbit, in the reeking, ammonia-laced confines of a corpse-starch dispensary that doubled as a flophouse. Ratbit, his eyes wide with chem-induced paranoia and the genuine fear of what lurked in the deep dark, had babbled about more than just stone that breathes and tunnels that walk. He'd whispered of the silent song that pulls you down and the place where shapes ain't right. He'd clutched a crudely made icon of the Emperor, its features worn smooth. "They hear it, Lexman. The song, it changes things, makes them part of the quiet. Don't go down to 5, Lexman. No one comes back from 5 the same. If they come back at all." Davian had given the creature a few extra nutrient paste tokens for his trouble, the information unsettlingly specific for Ratbit's usual ramblings. His next stop had been a more direct confrontation. Slaggard, the hulking, vat-grown chieftain of the local sump-dog gang, held court in a rusted-out promethium cistern, surrounded by his heavily armed, feral-looking enforcers. The air stank of unrefined fuel, stale sweat, and aggression. Slaggard, his face a roadmap of ritual scars and crude prison-style tattoos depicting leering demonic faces, had not been pleased by the Arbites' presence. He'd offered more than veiled warnings about places best left undisturbed. "That door to 5, Slaggard had rasped, his voice like rocks grinding together, his cybernetic eye whirring as it focused on Davian. "It ain't just old, Arbiter. It's cursed. My grandpappy's grandpappy used to say it sealed away something that even the old ones, the ones who built this hive before the Emperor's light, feared. We lose gangers down there sometimes, fools looking for scrap or running from us. They don't come back. Or if they do." He'd paused, a flicker of something akin to fear in his one good eye. "They ain't gangers no more. They're just meat. Screaming meat." Davian had pressed for details, but Slaggard had clammed up, his proprietary menace returning. "You want to go poking that beast, Lexman, you do it on your own, but don't expect the sump dogs to pull your corpse out, and don't bring whatever's down there back up to my territory." The encounter had been a stark reminder of how little his badge truly meant in these lightless depths, where survival was the only creed, and ancient fears held more sway than imperial law. He'd left a lingering threat of his own. Any interference with his investigation would bring the full, indiscriminate wrath of the Arbites down on the sump dogs. It was a bluff, given his limited resources, but one he hoped Slaggard was too pragmatic to call. His descent began in earnest at the mouth of Transit Shaft Kappa 7, a gaping, jagged maw in the ferrocrete floor of a derelict pumping station, its massive gears seized with rust and the slow, inexorable creep of time. The lift car, a skeletal cage of pitted iron, groaned like a dying beast as it began its reluctant plunge, the winch mechanism above screeching in protest, showering them with rust flakes and grime. Each level they passed was a distinct stratum in Hive Zythar's geological record of human misery and forgotten epochs. First, the tangled, dripping networks of the lower pipe runs, their corroded surfaces slick with bioluminescent slime, home to mutated things with far too many eyes that skittered away from the intrusive beams of their lamp packs. Then, the silent, echoing ruins of collapsed hab blocks from forgotten centuries, their interiors choked with dust, solidified pollutants, and the faint, lingering psychic residue of countless forgotten lives. Here, the air grew colder, heavier, the familiar acrid tang of the upper underhive slowly giving way to a damp, loamy scent, almost like freshly turned earth after a toxic rain, but with an underlying, deeply unsettling metallic sharpness that bit at the back of his throat and made his teeth ache. A faint, almost imperceptible vibration, the same one he'd felt on the gantry, pulsed through the lift car structure, a silent, rhythmic heartbeat from the depths. He was not alone. Accompanying him was a grim-faced squad of four enforcers, their carapace armor scuffed and bearing the faded, chipped insignia of Precinct 734, a clenched fist gripping a crackling lightning bolt. They were the dregs, the ones no other Lexman wanted, the ones whose files were thick with reprimands or commendations for excessive force, but Davian knew their kind. Hard-bitten, cynical, and inured to the everyday horrors of the Underhive. There was Vorlog, a hulking brute whose vocabulary seemed limited to grunts, curses, and the occasional surprisingly insightful observation about structural weaknesses. His stub-nosed shotgun, Mercy, was practically an extension of his arm. Beside him, Lyra, smaller, wiry, her face etched with a grim piety that seemed at odds with her quick, brutal efficiency in a firefight. Her fingers often strayed to the tarnished Aquila pendant she wore around her neck, a nervous habit. She carried a standard-issue las gun, its power pack freshly charged, and a bandolier of extra cells. Then Kalen, younger than the others, barely out of his teens, his movements quick and precise, a tech scrounger's gleam in his eyes that hadn't yet been entirely extinguished by the horrors of his profession. He was their breacher, armed with a heavy industrial plasma cutter, a satchel of demolition charges, and an almost unhealthy fascination with pre-imperial technology. Finally, there was Rook, the veteran, his face a mask of scar tissue from a near-fatal encounter with a chem mutant years ago, his eyes holding the weary, haunted knowledge of too many descents into Xythar's lightless underbelly. Rook was their Vox operator, a bulky, heavily modified comms pack strapped to his back, its antennae twitching like an insect's feelers. He was also, unofficially, the squad's conscience, what little of it remained. "Smells like a damn crypt down here, Lexman," Vorlag rumbled, his voice echoing slightly in the confines of the lift cage. He spat onto the grimy floor, a glob of something viscous and unpleasant. Or a sump ghoul's latrine. Davian didn't turn. "Save your breath, Vorlag. You'll need it for screaming later." His attempt at grim humor fell flat, even to his own ears. The air was growing noticeably colder, and their breath began to fog, each exhalation a fleeting white ghost in the gloom. The lift car juddered, then scraped against something unseen in the shaft, sending a shower of debris raining down. Keelan yelped as a chunk of ferrocrete narrowly missed his head. The transit shaft, marked on Davian's archaic schematics as terminating at sublevel XC Ahin, with a small maintenance junction, ended abruptly and far sooner than expected. The schematics, acquired from a reluctant, paper-skinned administratum clerk in exchange for a week's worth of ration scripts, and a promise to forget the clerk's minor embezzlements regarding office supplies, were already proving dangerously unreliable. Instead of a junction, the lift car shuddered to a halt, its aged motors whining in protest, before a colossal adamantium blast door. It was ancient, its surface pitted and scarred by the passage of uncounted centuries, easily predating the current hive structures by millennia. No markings, no imperial eagles, no honorifics of its construction, no mechanicus seals of purity. Just sheer, unyielding, indifferent metal, meters thick. According to the faded, almost illegible annotations on the schematics, this door sealed off what was designated Sector Gehenna Fieve, an area supposedly abandoned, declared Perdita's Maxima by some forgotten imperial decree, after a series of catastrophic tectonic shifts 3 millennia prior. The door's massive cog-driven mechanism was frozen solid with a thick accretion of rust and mineral deposits, looking more like a geological formation, a natural barrier, than a piece of technology. A faint, sickly bioluminescence, the color of week-old bruises or decaying flesh, seeped from almost invisible cracks around its immense edges, pulsing faintly, rhythmically, like a diseased heart. "Well, ain't that a welcome mat?" Rook muttered, his voice dry, his hand instinctively going to the grip of his auto pistol. "Looks like the party's through here." "Kalen," Davian ordered, his voice flat, betraying none of the cold dread that was beginning to coalesce in his own gut like a block of ice. "Earn your pay, and be quick about it. I don't like this place. Kalen nodded, hefting the bulky plasma cutter. He ran a quick diagnostic, his fingers flying over the controls. Power cells full, Lexman. But this door, it's not on any standard Imperial template. Pre-scouring, maybe even Dark Age, it's going to take time. The weapon's distinctive rising whine as it powered up was almost deafening in the confined space, a stark contrast to the oppressive silence that had fallen. A silence broken only by the faint, rhythmic pulsing of the light from the door's cracks. The hiss of the plasma stream igniting, a miniature sun of incandescent fury, filled the air with the sharp metallic scent of superheated adamantium. Molten metal, glowing cherry red then cooling to angry orange, sprayed and dripped, forcing them to shield their eyes. The caustic air burned Davian's throat and lungs, each inhalation a fresh torment. The work was slow, agonizing. The door was impossibly thick, resisting the plasma lance with stubborn, ancient defiance. Hours seemed to pass, marked only by the depletion of the plasma cutter's energy cells, which Kalen replaced with grim efficiency from his satchel, and the growing unease of the squad. Lyra kept murmuring prayers under her breath, her eyes darting nervously at the pulsing cracks. Vorlog paced like a caged grox, his shotgun held at the ready. Even Rook, usually stoic, kept checking the vox, though it remained stubbornly silent, emitting only a low hiss of static. Davian watched the door, a growing sense of foreboding settling upon him. This was no ordinary abandoned sector. This felt like a tomb, or a prison. Suddenly, a section of the door where Kalen had been focusing the plasma stream began to glow with an internal, malevolent red light. Strange, glyph-like symbols, previously invisible, flared into view on its surface, burning with an angry intensity. They were not Imperial, not Xenos, he recognized. They pulsed in time with the sickly bioluminescence. "Back!" Kalen yelled, stumbling away from the door, his face pale. "Something's wrong, it's reacting!" As he spoke, a wave of intense psychic pressure washed over them, like a physical blow. Davian staggered, clutching his head as a cacophony of whispers, screams, and alien thoughts flooded his mind. Lyra cried out and collapsed, clutching her Aquila. Vorlag roared inarticulately, firing his shotgun blindly at the door, the pellets sparking harmlessly. Rook was on his knees, blood trickling from his nose and ears. The glowing glyphs on the door pulsed faster, brighter, and then, with a sound like tearing reality, a section of the adamantium, meters thick, simply dissolved, not melted but unmade, revealing a jagged, dark opening. The psychic assault ceased as abruptly as it had begun, leaving them gasping, their minds reeling. Finally, with a tortured groan that echoed down the shaft like the death cry of some leviathan, a section of the blast door, large enough for them to pass, sagged inwards, then tore free with a shriek of protesting metal, the previously dissolved section now a gaping, unnatural hole. The first indication that this was far beyond a simple missing persons case, far beyond even the usual underhive horrors of mutants or feral cults, came not as a sound or a sight, but as a wave of intensely cold air that washed over them, extinguishing the lingering heat from the plasma cutter in an instant. It carried with it a complex, deeply unsettling odor. The sharp tang of ozone, the damp chill of undisturbed stone, the faint, cloying sweetness of overripe fruit, mingled with the unmistakable coppery tang of old blood, and something else. Something indescribably alien, a scent that had no terrestrial analog, that spoke of vast, unlighted spaces and intelligences that had never known the warmth of a sun. Beyond the ragged breach lay not the expected vista of collapsed hab blocks and industrial ruins depicted on the unreliable schematics. Instead, a corridor stretched into impenetrable darkness, its architecture utterly alien. The walls were not plasteel or ferrocrete, but a seamless, obsidian-like material, unnaturally smooth and cold to the touch, almost greasy. It absorbed the light from their lamp packs, giving back only a dull, malevolent sheen. The sickly green-blue bioluminescence they had glimpsed around the door pulsed faintly from intricate, circuit-like patterns etched into the very surface of these strange, ebon walls. These were no Imperial constructions. They bore no resemblance to any known Xenos architecture Davian had ever encountered in Arbite's picked briefings or lurid tales from void-scarred veterans. The patterns were complex, geometric, forming recursive loops and impossible angles that seemed to writhe subtly at the very periphery of his vision, inducing a faint sense of vertigo and nausea. Throne of Terra, preserve us. Lyra whispered, her voice tight with awe and fear. She instinctively made the sign of the Aquila, her knuckles white. She was still trembling from the psychic assault. Kaelin, his face pale and beaded with sweat from the exertion of cutting the door, simply stared, his mouth agape. Even Vorlog, the hardened brute, seemed momentarily stunned into silence, his usual bravado replaced by a wide-eyed apprehension. He sniffed the air, his lip curling. Smells wrong, like death and numbers. Davian swept his lamp pack's beam across the nearest wall. The etchings resembled no Zeno's script, no heretical sigil, no Mechanicus datacant he had ever seen. They were a language unto themselves, a silent, chilling testament to a presence utterly divorced from human understanding. Stay alert, he commanded, his voice a harsh rasp in the sudden, tune-like silence. He fought to keep the tremor from his own voice, the lingering echoes of the psychic assault still whispering at the edges of his mind. Standard sweep formation. Rook, Voxlink active. Full spectrum scan. Report any anomalies, no matter how minor. Rook fumbled with the dials on his comms pack, his gaze darting nervously into the oppressive darkness. Voxlink, it's weak, Lexman. Full of static. Like something's damping the signal. And I'm picking up strange energy readings. Non-standard. Way off the charts. His hands were shaking. The corridor narrowed as they advanced, the only sounds the crunch of their heavy boots on a fine, almost impalpable metallic dust that coated the floor and the increasingly ragged sound of their own breathing. This dust, Davian noted with a growing sense of unease, seemed to possess a peculiar quality. It didn't just lie inert. When the beams of their lamp packs fell upon it, the dust seemed to recoil, to shimmer and flow for a fraction of a second, like disturbed water before settling again. It clung to their armor and weapons, forming a thin, almost iridescent sheen that was difficult to brush off. He felt a persistent, prickling sensation on the exposed skin of his neck and hands, a subtle numbness that was slowly spreading, like an invisible frost. He resisted the urge to wipe it away, instead making a silent, grim mental note. The air itself hummed with a low, almost sub-audible frequency, a vibration that resonated deep within their chest cavities, in their very bones. It was the same thrumming he'd felt on the gantry far above, but now it was pervasive, inescapable, the heartbeat of this alien place. Their progress was agonizingly slow, a meticulous, nerve-shredding crawl into the unknown. The labyrinthine passages twisted and turned with no discernible logic, defying any attempt to map them using conventional methods. Occasionally, the corridor would open into small, unnervingly symmetrical chambers, their walls covered in the same pulsing glyphs. Some chambers were empty, their silence profound and disturbing. Others contained what looked like alcoves, but on closer inspection, these were sealed, as if something had been interred within. The walls remained the same cold, black, etched material. In one passage, they found a section where the obsidian-like material was translucent, and behind it, they could see vast, impossibly complex machineries moving with slow, deliberate purpose, their function utterly unknowable, their scale dwarfing anything Davian had ever imagined. The sight filled them with a profound sense of insignificance. The metallic dust grew thicker underfoot, muffling their steps, and Davian noticed with mounting alarm that it had a peculiar, faint scent. The same coppery, organic smell he'd noticed when the blast door first opened, now mingled with the scent of ozone and something else, something that reminded him of burnt circuitry. They passed a side tunnel from which a gust of frigid air emanated, carrying with it the distinct, horrifying smell of cooked meat. Vorlag growled and aimed his shotgun down it, but Davian waved him on. We stick to the mission. Find the survey teams. The first real horror, the one that shattered their dwindling composure and plunged them into a new realm of terror, manifested approximately 20 Terran standard hours into their descent, according to Davian's flickering chronometer. They had been meticulously mapping their torturous progress, leaving glowing chemical markers at every junction. A standard arbitrator procedure for navigating unfamiliar territory, though Davian had a sinking feeling they were utterly useless here. Vorlog, who had been taking point, his shotgun held at the ready, his senses on high alert, rounded a sharp, unpleasantly acute corner and let out a strangled cry, a sound abruptly cut short, followed by a wet, tearing noise. Davian and the others rushed forward, weapons raised, hearts pounding. Vorlag was stumbling backward, his face a mask of chalky terror, his shotgun forgotten, dangling from its strap. He was pointing, his hand shaking violently. "By the Golden Throne, Lexman, look, just look." His voice was a choked whisper. In the center of a small, circular chamber, its dimensions unnervingly perfect, one of the missing survey team members was displayed. Impaled was too simple a word. He was part of a jagged spire of the same obsidian material as the walls, which had erupted from the floor. Or rather, he was becoming part of it. The man's flesh, where it was still recognizable as such, was a sickly, translucent gray like spoiled meat. His limbs were elongated, twisted at unnatural angles, hideously fused with the crystalline structure of the spire. His eyes, wide and milky, stared unseeingly at the oppressive, curved ceiling, frozen in an expression of ultimate, uncomprehending terror. But the most horrific detail, the one that burned itself into Davian's memory, was the intricate, silvery tracery that spread across the man's remaining skin, mirroring the circuit-like patterns on the walls, pulsing with that same faint, sickly, internal light. It was as if the very material of the maze itself was growing through him, consuming him from within, transforming him into a grotesque monument of flesh and alien crystal. A fine, silvery ichor, thick and viscous, seeped from the junctions where flesh met crystal, hardening upon exposure to the frigid air into the same metallic dust that now coated their boots. Around the base of the spire, several large, chitinous, insectoid creatures, the size of hive rats, with multiple glowing eyes and razor-sharp mandibles, were scuttling, seemingly feeding on the ichor, their bodies also showing faint traces of the silvery patterns. They scattered into crevices as the Arbites entered, hissing. "Emperor, preserve us," Lyra breathed, her voice barely a whisper. She squeezed her eyes shut, her hand flying to the aquila at her throat, her knuckles bone white. Kaelin, his face tinged green, turned away and vomited violently, the sound harsh and wet in the sudden awful silence. Rook simply stared, his weathered face frozen in an unreadable expression of shock and dawning horror. "What is this place?" he whispered. "What are these things?" Davian felt a cold, hard knot tighten in his stomach, a physical manifestation of the dread that was now flooding his system. This was no Xeno's attack in any conventional sense, he understood. This was something far more insidious, far more alien. "Secure the chamber," he ordered, his voice raspier than he intended, the words catching in his dry throat. "Kaelin, when you're done, get a sample of that, ichor, and one of those creatures, if you can. Carefully. Vorlag, Lyra, watch the corridor. Rook, any change on the vox?" Rook shook his head, still staring at the transfigured surveyor. "Nothing, Lexman, just the whispering. It's louder now. And the energy readings, they spiked when we entered this chamber." Davian approached the grotesque spire, his shock maul held defensively, its power cell thrumming a weak counterpoint to the louder, more pervasive hum of the chamber. The air around the body was frigid, and the low, resonant hum was noticeably more intense here, vibrating through the floor into his boots. The circuit-etched patterns on the surveyor's skin seemed to shift, to flow with a slow, deliberate rhythm, as if powered by some unseen internal current. It was a grotesque parody of Mechanicus augmentation, flesh and alien technology melded into a terrifying, symbiotic new form. He forced himself to look closer, to observe. He noted the surveyor's ident tags, miraculously still visible, embedded in the gray flesh. "Gilder Thomason, K, Geotech, 2nd Class, Sector Gamma 9 Survey Corps." His data slate, standard issue for all survey teams, was missing. Consumed, perhaps, or incorporated. His uniform was torn, and Davian could see puncture marks on his exposed skin, not from the crystal, but smaller, as if from the mandibles of those insectoid creatures. Were they part of the maze, or just scavengers adapted to this horrific ecosystem? The discovery of Thomason was only the beginning. They found two more bodies in similar states over the next 6 agonizing hours, each in a different, isolated section of the ever-twisting, ever-shifting maze. One was a Munitorum historian, his robed form contorted around a pulsing crystalline nodule, his face a silent scream, his parchment scrolls scattered around him, already filmed with the metallic dust, the ink on them seemingly being absorbed by the dust. The other was a Guild Geotech, her limbs fused into the wall itself, only her terrified face and one outstretched hand visible, as if she were trying to claw her way out of the alien stone. Her fingers were worn down to the bone, the stone around them stained dark. Each discovery was a fresh hammer blow to the enforcer's rapidly crumbling morale. The chem markers they'd been painstakingly leaving behind were disappearing. At first, Davian had suspected they were malfunctioning due to the strange atmospheric conditions or the pervasive energy field. But after cautiously backtracking to a previously marked junction, a corridor they had traversed less than an hour before, they found the wall smooth and unbroken, the glowing marker gone as if it had been absorbed, swallowed by the ebon stone. The maze was changing, rearranging itself behind them, sealing off their retreat, hurting them. They were no longer explorers, however reluctant. They were rats in a trap that was actively, intelligently toying with them. Kaelin tried using a portable auspex to scan the walls where a marker had vanished. The device shrieked, a burst of static and garbled code flashing across its small screen before it went dead, a thin trickle of smoke curling from its casing. It's rewriting the machine's spirit? He stammered, horrified. The Voxlink, their only tenuous connection to the distant, sunlit world above, began to crackle with increasing interference. The strange whispers, too low to decipher clearly, bled through the static, no longer just a background hiss, but coalescing into sibilant, multi-toned voices, speaking in a clicking, guttural language that made Davian's teeth ache and the hairs on the back of his neck stand on end. It was insidious, crawling into their minds, bypassing their ears. His own physical state was deteriorating alarmingly. The numbness in his left hand had spread up his arm to the elbow, and a fine silvery sheen, like a second skin of flexible metal, was beginning to coat the flesh, tracing the lines of his veins. It didn't hurt, not yet, but it felt profoundly alien, utterly wrong. The air, thick with the swirling metallic dust and the faint, sweet organic smell that now seemed to cling to everything, was becoming harder to breathe, each inhalation a conscious effort against a tightening in his chest, as if invisible bands were constricting his lungs. He saw Lyra clutching her throat, coughing, her eyes watering. It was during one of their brief, tense rests in a small, blessedly empty alcove that they found what remained of Magos biologist Vull, the leader of the missing Mechanicus Explorator team. It wasn't a body, not in any recognizable sense. Instead, a collection of his distinctive, crimson-robed mechadendrites. Cutting tools, data probes, optical sensors were mangled and twisted, fused into a pulsating, fungal-like growth that clung to the wall like some obscene metallic lichen. The growth was shot through with the now familiar silvery circuit-like veins, and at its center, a single, still-functioning optical lens, its red glow flickering erratically, stared blankly out at them. This was the Adeptus Mechanicus Explorator Adept, a servant of the Omnisiah, reduced to this techno-organic horror. His distinctive robes were shredded and incorporated into the biomass, their sacred red now a sickly mottled purple. Several of Vol's servo skulls lay shattered on the floor nearby, their cranial casings cracked open, the delicate cogitators within fused into glassy slag. One, however, still twitched, its single optical lens trying to focus on Davian. A faint, garbled burst of binary code, a prayer to the machine god, hissed from its vox emitter before it too went dark. The Omnisiah's light is truly absent in this accursed place, Lyra muttered, her face a mask of grim piety and barely suppressed nausea. She clutched her lasgun so tightly her knuckles were white. This is techno-heresy of the highest order. Davian, fighting back his own wave of revulsion, cautiously approached the grotesque amalgamation. Vol's mechadendrites, usually symbols of the Mechanicus's cold logic, their mastery over the machine, were now part of this organic, alien, living horror. One of the mechadendrites, a slender data probe tipped with a crystalline stylus, twitched erratically, then slowly, deliberately extended towards him. Davian flinched back, but then, steeling himself, he reached out with his gloved right hand and touched the tip of the probe. A jolt, not of electricity, but of pure, raw, unfiltered information, surged up his arm, bypassing his senses and slamming directly into his consciousness. Images, sounds, alien sensations, and pure, terrifying concepts flooded his mind in a chaotic torrent. Shifting, impossible geometries that defied Euclidean understanding, the taste of cold, metallic fear, the silent, screaming hunger of something ancient, vast, and utterly inhuman, and a recurring complex mathematical sequence, an algorithm of malevolent sentience that seemed to underpin the very structure and behavior of the maze. For a fleeting, terrifying moment, he saw through Vol's still-active optical lens, saw himself and his team not as individuals, but as small, insignificant specks of fleeting warmth, of transient data, in a cold, calculating, and eternally patient darkness. He saw the maze not as a place, but as a vast, predatory organism, a geological-scale data processor, sifting, analyzing, consuming. He recoiled with a choked gasp, stumbling back, the silvery sheen on his own left arm now visibly pulsing with a faint, sympathetic light. The connection, however brief, had changed something within him. The information hadn't just been data. It had been a seed, a fragment of the maze's own consciousness, planted deep within his own. He could feel it there, a cold, alien presence, observing, learning, growing. He felt an urge, a sudden, inexplicable desire to understand the mathematical sequence, to trace its elegant, terrifying logic. "Lexman, what in the Emperor's name did you see?" Vorlog demanded, his voice strained, his usual bluster gone, replaced by a raw fear that mirrored Davian's own. Rook had his hand on his sidearm, his gaze darting around the alcove as if expecting the walls themselves to attack. Davian fought to control his ragged breathing, his mind reeling from the psychic assault, the alien data fragments still echoing within his skull like shards of broken glass. "This place, it's alive," he managed to force out, the words tasting like ash and metal. It's learning. It's processing us." He looked at his own left arm, now almost entirely coated in the silvery, faintly glowing sheen. The patterns were more distinct, more intricate than before, mirroring those on the walls with terrifying precision. He could feel a faint thrumming from within it, a resonance with the pervasive hum of the maze. Vol, he wasn't just killed. He was cataloged, deconstructed. His knowledge, his link to the new sphere, it's all been absorbed. He flexed the fingers of his transformed hand. They moved with a strange, fluid grace, the silvery material feeling less like a coating and more like an integral part of him. Lyra made a choking sound. "Absorbed? Like a cogitator?" "Worse," Davian said, his voice hollow, like sustenance. "We're not just intruders here. We're raw materials. Information to be indexed, energy to be utilized." The knowledge was no longer a suspicion, but a physical weight, a crushing, undeniable certainty. The maze wasn't just a structure, it was a predator, an entity of unfathomable age and intellect. The missing teams hadn't just been killed, they had been assimilated. Their knowledge, their skills, their very biological and technological beings, consumed and incorporated into its alien matrix. The whispers in the vox, now a constant, sibilant chorus just below the threshold of conscious hearing, were not random interference. They were its voice, its thoughts, its attempts to parse their own language, their own fears, their own faith. The shifting corridors, the selective absorption of their markers, it was all part of its hunting strategy, its method of processing new acquisitions. The horrifying revelation, the sheer, mind-numbing scale of the threat, spurred them into a desperate, panicked flight. Logic, what little remained in their terror-stricken minds, dictated they try to find a central point, a core, something tangible to destroy, to disrupt its control. It was a fool's hope, Davian knew even then, a dying ember of his Arbite's training flickering in the overwhelming darkness, but it was all they had left. But the maze, now fully aware of their presence and their intentions, seemed to anticipate their every move, to counter their desperate strategies before they were even fully formed. Corridors that had been open moments before sealed off with silent, implacable finality, the black stone flowing like cooling lava, reforming into seamless, impenetrable walls. New passages, not on any schematic, not conforming to any sane geometry, opened where none had existed, their depths filled with a darkness that seemed to swallow the beams of their lamp packs, beckoning them deeper into the suffocating, intelligent blackness. Once, a passage sealed just inches in front of Vorlog's face, the stone rippling and reforming with a sound like sighing breath. He punched it in frustration, his armored fist making no impression. The metallic dust was thicker now, swirling invisible, iridescent currents, stirred by unfelt internal winds, as if the maze itself were breathing. It coated their armor, their weapons, their exposed skin, a shimmering second skin that pulsed with a faint internal light. The air throbbed with the entity's silent, cold thoughts, a psychic pressure that was becoming unbearable, fraying the edges of their sanity. Rook was the first to truly break. He began screaming, not in fear, but in rage, clawing at his comms pack, which had begun to emit a low, melodious humming, interspersed with what sounded like distorted liturgical chants. "It's in the machine spirit. The Omnissiah is defiled." He smashed the bulky unit against the wall, shattering its casing. Then, his eyes wide and bloodshot, he turned on Vorlag, screaming that Vorlag was an unbeliever, a flesh puppet of the maze. "The weakness of the flesh invites the corruption," he shrieked, lunging with his combat knife. Vorlag, his own fear making him brutal and quick, subdued him with a heavy blow from his shotgun butt to the temple, leaving Rook moaning and semi-conscious on the dusty floor. They had to drag him, a dead weight, his earlier warnings about the Vox now a terrifyingly ironic memory. Kalin, the young tech-savvy enforcer, was next to fall, not to a direct attack, but to the maze's insidious targeted manipulation. They found him standing transfixed before a section of wall where the bioluminescent patterns had resolved into a shimmering, three-dimensional, illusory image. A sun-drenched field on what looked like a pristine agri-world, complete with blue skies and fluffy white clouds. A scene of impossible beauty and peace. Something no one in Hive Zythar had seen for millennia, if ever. He was weeping, reaching out to the image. Babbling about his childhood on a distant agri-world, he'd only heard stories about from his grandmother, stories that had been his only escape from the grim reality of the Underhive. "It's so warm," he whispered, a single tear tracing a path through the grime on his cheek. "I can feel the sun. I can smell the harvest. Mama?
Kalin! Snap out of it! It's not real!
It's a trick!" Lyra shouted, shaking his shoulder, her voice cracking with desperation. But he didn't respond, his eyes fixed on the impossible vista, a look of blissful peace on his face. Then, as they watched in horror, the silvery, razor-sharp tendrils, thinner than wires but strong as plasteel, erupted not from the floor but from the wall itself, from the heart of the illusory image, as if reaching out from that false paradise. They pierced his outstretched hand, then his chest, his neck with sickening precision. He let out a high, thin scream, his eyes wide with sudden, terrible understanding, the blissful expression replaced by one of ultimate betrayal. Before he was dragged into the wall, the illusion flickering and dissolving like mist as the stone rippled like dark water to receive him. His screams were cut short with a sickening, wet, tearing sound. His plasma cutter, its charge long spent, clattered onto the dusty floor, a forgotten relic. Lyra fired a wild burst from her lasgun at the spot where he'd vanished, the energy beams splashing harmlessly against the now solid, impassive stone, leaving only faint, quickly fading scorch marks. The maze had learned, adapted. It was no longer just using brute force. It was using their own memories, their own deepest desires, their most cherished hopes against them. It was a psychological predator as much as a physical one. Davian, Vorlag, Lyra, and the barely conscious, now whimpering Rook pressed on, blind terror now their only guide, their only fuel. Their formation was ragged, their discipline shattered. Fear was a tangible presence beside them, a cold, clammy hand on their shoulders, its icy breath on their necks. The physical toll was immense. Davian's left arm, up to the shoulder now, was almost entirely encased in the silvery, circuit-etched growth. It no longer felt entirely numb. Instead, strange, alien sensations coursed through it. A faint vibration that matched the maze's thrumming, a cold awareness of the intricate patterns that surrounded them, a sense of being connected to something vast and incomprehensibly complex. It felt like a part of him, yet utterly, terrifyingly alien. He could almost feel the maze's thoughts, its cold, dispassionate, analytical curiosity, its insatiable hunger. The hunger was the worst part, not for food, not for sustenance in any human sense, but for sensation, for data, for memory, for the fading warmth and complexity of their doomed humanity. It was a perverse echo of the flare virus that plagued the ancient Necrons, a curse of eternal gnawing emptiness. But this felt older, colder, its origins lost to the deepest, darkest abysses of galactic prehistory. It wasn't just consuming, it was experiencing through them. Tasting the universe through their dying senses, savoring their fear, their despair, their dwindling hope. They rounded a corner and found themselves in a wider section of corridor, the walls lined with alcoves. In each alcove was a vaguely humanoid shape,
completely encased in the black crystalline material, like statues. Some were clearly Xenos in origin, their forms twisted and alien, a slender, multi-limbed creature here, a bulky, reptilian form there. Others were unmistakably human, or had been. One alcove held what looked like a space marine in ancient power armor, its surface pitted and corroded, but the iconic shape undeniable. It was frozen mid-stride, one hand outstretched, its bolter fused to its gauntlet. The sight of such a mighty warrior of the Imperium, fallen and entombed here, struck a fresh wave of despair into Davian's heart. If even an angel of death could not escape this place, what hope did they have? Rook died next, not from an attack, but from within. He began to convulse violently, the silvery sheen spreading rapidly across his face like frost on a window pane, his eyes rolling back until only the whites showed. He babbled in a multitude of voices, the calm, precise tones of Gilder Thomason discussing geological strata, the reedy tenor of the Munitorum historian reciting a litany of forgotten battles, the guttural clicks of the maze itself, and then, chillingly, the distorted, mocking voice of Marshal Grust. "Don't come back if it means more paperwork, Davian." Then, with a final shuddering gasp, his body went rigid, the light in his eyes extinguished. The patterns on his skin pulsed once, brightly, then faded. He was another data point, archived, his fears and memories now part of the maze's terrible library. Lyra, her faith crumbling, her face streaked with tears and grime, recited the litany of protection, her voice hoarse and trembling, but the words sounded hollow, meaningless, in this place where the Emperor's light could not reach, where even the machine god's servants were consumed. They stumbled, exhausted and on the verge of complete collapse, into a vast cavern, so large their lamp packs could not illuminate its far reaches, the oppressive darkness seeming to press in on them from all sides. The air here resonated with the thrumming hum, so intense it was almost a physical blow, making their teeth vibrate in their skulls and their vision blur at the edges. In the center of this colossal chamber, a structure of impossible scale pulsed with an intense, sickly green-blue light, casting dancing, monstrous shadows on the distant, unseen walls. It was a nexus of the circuit-like patterns that covered every surface of the maze, a grotesque, crystalline heart for this techno-organic monstrosity, reaching up into the unseen darkness above like a cancerous, petrified tree, its branches lost in the gloom. Around its immense base, embedded in the translucent, glowing crystal like insects in ancient amber, were dozens, perhaps hundreds, of figures. The members of the other missing teams, Guilders, Munitorum scribes, Mechanicus adepts, their forms twisted, elongated, and fused into the crystalline matrix, their faces frozen in masks of silent, eternal terror, their eyes wide and staring, were hosts, biological batteries, data nodes for the alien intelligence, their life energies and neural patterns slowly siphoned off. Silvery ichor, thick as congealed oil, dripped from them in a slow, steady rain, feeding the swirling, knee-deep metallic dust below, which eddied and flowed like a living sea. This was the system they were up against, a system of relentless consumption and horrifying transformation. This was the core. This was the god of this lightless, subterranean world. "The core," Lyra whispered, her voice devoid of all emotion, her lasgun falling from nerveless fingers to clatter onto the dusty crystal floor. Her eyes, wide and vacant, reflected the pulsing alien light of the central structure. "We can't fight this. It's beautiful. So much order. So much purpose." Her faith, her sanity, her very identity had finally shattered under the immense psychic pressure, replaced by a terrifying, ecstatic awe. She took a stumbling step towards the pulsating structure, a beatific, empty smile on her face, her arms outstretched as if to embrace it. "It calls to me. It understands. The Emperor is a lie, only the pattern is real." She began to sing, a tuneless, discordant hymn in a language that was not her own, her voice cracking and breaking. Vorlog, the hulking enforcer, the last bastion of brute human defiance, roared, a sound of pure, primal, animalistic fury. It was not a sound of strategy or hope, but of sheer, unadulterated rage against the dying of the light, against the cold, uncaring universe that had birthed such horrors. He grabbed Lyra, trying to pull her back, but she fought him, her eyes blazing with alien fervor. "Let me go. I must join the song." He shoved her aside, then turned to face the crystal. He unslung his shotgun, but then with a grimace dropped it. He fumbled at his belt, pulling free his last two crack grenades. "If I'm going down," he bellowed, his voice raw, "I'm taking a piece of this damnation with me. For the Emperor. For Terra." He primed grenades and charged, berserker aura of pure suicidal fury around him. He reached the base of the crystal, slamming the grenades against its glowing surface. The explosion was surprisingly muted, absorbed by the crystal, but a section of it cracked, a web of black fissures spreading outwards. For a moment, the pulsing light faltered, and a wave of pure agonizing pain, not his own, washed through Davian's mind from his transformed arm. The maze felt that. But it was not enough. Obsidian tendrils thicker than his torso, sharp as monomolecular blades, shot out from the crystal, with blinding speed, not just from the floor, but from all around. They pierced Vorlag from a dozen directions, lifting him into the air, his body convulsing. He gave one last defiant, blood-curdling shout, a curse upon the maze and all its works, before he was dragged down, not into the floor this time, but into the central crystal itself. His struggling form briefly visible as a dark, thrashing shape within the glowing matrix, before being completely absorbed, becoming another silent, frozen testament to the maze's power, another nutrient source, another memory bank. The cracks in the crystal slowly, inexorably began to heal, the black lines fading as the green-blue light intensified once more. Lyra, forgotten in the chaos, had crawled to the base of the crystal and was gently stroking its surface, humming her alien tune, her eyes shining with tears of joy as the silvery patterns began to creep up her own arms. Davian was alone. Or rather, he was alone with the maze. The hunger, the alien craving that had been steadily growing within him, was now a roaring inferno, a vast, echoing emptiness that demanded to be filled. He looked at his transformed left arm, the intricate silvery patterns glowing brightly, pulsing in perfect synchronicity with the colossal crystal heart before him. He could feel the maze probing his mind, no longer with cold curiosity, but with a sense of welcome, of recognition. It was sifting through his memories, his training, his ingrained devotion to the Lex Imperialis, the tenets of imperial justice. It was a cold, dispassionate, yet strangely intimate examination. He raised his shock maul, its power cell sputtering, its charge almost depleted. One final act of defiance? One last futile gesture? He could try to strike the crystal, but he knew with a chilling certainty that came not from his own mind but from the maze itself that it would be utterly futile. This chamber, this crystal, was merely one nexus, one processing core of a far larger, perhaps hive-wide, or even planet-wide consciousness. To strike it would be like a single skin cell trying to destroy a human brain. It would be an irrelevance. You sought knowledge. The chorus of voices whispered in his mind, no longer sibilant but resonant, almost beautiful in its alien complexity. It was the voice of Thomason, of Vol, of Kalin, of Vorlag, of Rook, of Lyra, and a thousand others, all blended into one harmonious, terrifying, and undeniably powerful whole. You sought order. We are order. You sought purpose. We are purpose. There is only the pattern. There is only transformation. There is only the hunger. And the hunger is the path to understanding, the path to unity, the path to eternity. His right hand, the one still mostly composed of flesh and blood, trembled violently. The values he had upheld, the laws he had sworn to enforce, the entire edifice of the Imperium of Man, seemed like fragile, pathetic, temporary constructs in the face of this ancient, cosmic, and eternal horror. Survival was the only imperative now, but survival on whose terms? He felt a strange, profound sense of detachment, as if he were observing himself from a great distance, a tiny, insignificant speck in an impossibly vast and complex machine. The fear was still there, a cold, hard knot in his gut, but it was overlaid with something new, something terrifyingly seductive. A cold, crystalline clarity. A sense of profound, ultimate logic. The petty bribes he'd sometimes taken, the blind eye he'd occasionally turned to minor corruption in the underhive to maintain a semblance of order. Those were small human failings, born of weakness and pragmatism. This was a corruption, a transformation, on a scale that dwarfed the Imperium itself, perhaps even the galaxy. But was it corruption, or was it evolution? Perfection? The final irrefutable answer to the chaos of existence? He didn't swing them all. With a slow, deliberate movement that felt both his own and not his own, guided by an intelligence far greater than his own, he lowered it. The silvery veins on his transformed arm pulsed with a warm, inviting light, and he felt a strange, powerful resonance with the colossal crystal heart before him. A sense of coming home. The hunger within him shifted, changed, intensified. It was no longer just the maze's hunger reflected in him. It was his hunger, a deep, primal craving to understand, to connect, to become part of this vast, intricate, and undeniably magnificent design. The increasingly blurred lines between Lexman Asperdavian and the ancient alien consciousness of the maze were dissolving, melting away like snow in a furnace, like individual data points being integrated into a master algorithm. He felt his own thoughts, his own memories, becoming part of the great chorus, yet retaining a strange, distinct echo. He took a step towards the crystal, then another. The metallic dust swirled around him, not abrasive now, but caressing his skin, seeping into his lungs, into his very being, without resistance. He felt the maze welcoming him, not as a conqueror welcomes a captive, but as a vast intellect welcomes a new, intriguing piece of data, an infinitesimal but unique part of its grand, terrifying, and ever-expanding equation. He was no longer just an arbitrator of the Lex Imperialis. He was becoming a component, a sensor, a specialized node in the endless, shifting, thinking labyrinth beneath Hive Zithar. The tremors that had once plagued his hand had ceased entirely, replaced by a steady, rhythmic pulse that matched the thrumming of the maze, the beating of its crystalline heart. He was becoming the system he had been sent to investigate, a willing, or perhaps simply inevitable, convert. The thought, when it finally coalesced in his rapidly changing consciousness, was not entirely his own, yet it resonated with a terrible, undeniable sense of peace, of purpose, of belonging. The maze endures, the pattern completes, the hunger is eternal. And I am home. I am part of the grand design, I understand. His last coherent human thought before the final vestiges of Asperdavian, the man, the arbiter, the individual, dissolved into the cool, intricate, and luminous embrace of the endless maze was a fleeting, bitter, and strangely ironic reflection. In the grim darkness of the 41st millennium, there were indeed far worse things than simple, honest death. There was understanding, there was assimilation, there was transformation. The luminous prophet, that ill-fated rogue trader from some forgotten tale, may have sought wealth and found only damnation. But Lexman Asperdavian, of the Adeptus Arbites, Precinct 734, had sought missing souls and found himself becoming an integral conscious part of an unending, alien, and utterly beautiful nightmare. The tomb world, if that's what this truly was, deep beneath the festering wound of Hive Zithar, was not slumbering. It was awake, it was aware, and it was eternally, insatiably hungry. And he, in his own small, insignificant, yet now vital way, was now part of that hunger. A new specialized cell in its ancient, terrifying, and ever-expanding body. But as the last spark of Asperdavian was extinguished, as his individual consciousness merged with the vaster mind of the maze, something unexpected occurred. The data he represented, the sum of his experiences, his training, his unyielding, if flawed, devotion to the concept of order, was not merely consumed or archived. It was prioritized, amplified. The maze, in its infinite cold calculations, recognized a unique variable in Davian, a lifetime spent imposing structure on chaos, a mind uniquely attuned to the containment of threats, a will forged in the fires of imperial justice. This was a quality it had rarely encountered, a pattern of thought that, while primitive, possessed a certain utility. The great crystal heart pulsed, a deep, resonant thrum that shook the very foundations of Gehenna Viv. The light within it shifted, becoming less chaotic, more focused. And then slowly, with a grinding finality that spoke of immense power, rechanneled and directed by a newfound, albeit alien, purpose. The myriad passages leading out of this core sector, the tunnels that connected this ancient awakened horror to the rest of the Underhive, began to seal. Not with the fluid, shifting stone of before, but with adamantium-hard, crystalline barriers, thicker than any blast door, growing from the walls, the floor, the ceiling, until all exits were utterly, irrevocably blocked. These barriers were etched with complex warding patterns, glyphs of containment and stasis that Davian, in his new state of being, understood implicitly, for he was now their architect. He, or what had once been Davian and was now an integral, directing node of the maze mind, became its warden. His consciousness, now a distributed network within the crystal lattice of Gehenna Viv, focused the maze's vast intellect on a single, overriding directive. Quarantine. The hunger was still there, an eternal constant, but it was now focused inward, a self-sustaining loop within the sealed sector. The maze would continue to process what it had already consumed, to refine its understanding, to explore the infinite permutations of its own existence, but it would not spread, not yet. The Davian node, a paradox of human will, embedded in an alien god machine, had imposed its final greatest order. Far above, in the grimy, indifferent halls of Precinct 734, Lexman Asper Davian and his team would be declared lost, presumed dead. Another statistic in the endless attrition of Underhive life. Marshall Grust would grumble about the paperwork, but secretly be relieved the problem had solved itself. The 17 layers of bureaucracy would file their reports, close the case, and forget. The tremors in Gehenna 4 would eventually cease. The strange energy readings fade. The sump dogs would find new, less troublesome territories to claim. Ratbit the informant would find new horrors to whisper about, though none would ever quite match the chilling truth of the silent song from below. But deep below, in the silent, eternal darkness of the sealed Gehennavi, the pattern endured. The maze, with its newest, most complex component, watched and waited and understood. The sacrifice of Asper Davian, if it could be called such, had bought Hive Zythar a reprieve, a stay of execution it would never know it had received. The horror remained, contained for now, a silent, patient god in its lightless tomb, its hunger a quiet, constant thrum in the heart of the world, a warden born of its own prey, now standing guard. And that, in the grim calculus of the 41st millennium, where victories were measured in moments stolen from damnation, was perhaps the closest thing to a victory one could hope for. The story of the endless maze beneath Hive Zythar, for this cycle, for this millennium, had reached its conclusion. The file was closed, the sector quarantined by its own transformed eternal guardian, forever.